Welcome and thank you, Community Living, Oshawa Clarent and families and guests for joining us on the call today. The board of directors and senior management team felt it was important to provide you with an opportunity to hear what CLOC has been doing to combat COVID-19. And also to have a chance in another forum to ask questions you might have. My name is Jean-Claude, and for those of you who know me, better known as J.C. Legault, president of the CLOC's board of directors. I've been a volunteer for 10 years and a member of the board for 7. During these last several weeks of unprecedented times, interfacing closely with the executive director and the senior team has allowed me to appreciate even more the exceptional dedication and skills of CLOC employees as they apply all means possible every day to provide the care and well-being of your loved ones, the people served by our great organization. We are fortunate on the board of directors to have people of varied background, experience, talents, and skills who work together as a team with senior management to ensure that the best available policies and precautions are applied to safeguard the people and staff in our residences. On behalf of the board, I want to express my deepest thanks to all of CLOC employees for their hard work and dedication to the organization and the people that CLOC serves during this exceptionally difficult time. We have been so impressed learning about the creative and innovative ways that they have been delivering supports and services to people over the past several weeks, and I very much enjoyed the photos and hearing stories about everything they have been doing. Additionally, I want to thank you, CLOC families, for your patience and understanding during this very challenging time. I will now refer to my notes as I want to introduce the panel of speakers who are all here to answer your questions. We have Terry Gray, Executive Director, Matt Morrow, First President of the Board, and moderator for today's discussion. Wayne Klinowski, who's also on the Board of Directors and as well a family member. Dr. Marwa Yunus Damani, Medical Director of Community Living Ontario and co-founder of Seamless Care Pharmacy. Janice Doolin, Director Operations, Bev Wynn and Christine Voss, Operation Managers, Doris Maniaco, Manager Human Resources, Randy Brown, Manager Health and Safety, and Marnie Salonius, Manager Resource Development and Public Relations. And I also want to give a special thank you to Wendy Shaw, the Executive Director and Board's Administrative Assistant, who is our technical administrator today with this conference. I look forward to hearing with you the updates and discussion. It's now time for me to invite our moderator, Matt Morrow, to proceed.
Well, thanks so much, JC. And hello, everybody. My name is Matt Morrow, and I have the honor and privilege of moderating and being a part of the family discussion today for Community Living Oshawa-Clarington. Just a few housekeeping items as we start today. If you have any questions during any part of the presentation, and please follow this step closely. You're going to click on the question button and type in your question. So along the bottom of your, if you scroll over the bottom of your the Zoom meeting here, you'll see there's a Q&A option. You're going to click on that, and that's where you will type in your question. When you type in your question, it will go directly to the panelists, and then those questions will be addressed during the question and answer period only. And should we not be able to answer all the questions, we only have a limited amount of time to do this Zoom meeting. Should the questions not be answered, then what will happen is once this meeting is complete, a communication will be sent out from Community Living Oshawa-Clarington, outlining and hopefully answering all those questions. This presentation is also being recorded, so it can be distributed after this meeting is finished. to those who may not have been able to attend. And now, without further ado, I'd like to pass the meeting on over to Terry Gray, who is the Executive Director for CLOC, to provide you with an overview of the actions and responses to COVID-19 and give you some updates about some new information from the government. So over to you, Terry.
Hello, everyone. Thank you all for joining us today. This is new technology for us, and so we hope that you bear with us and as we work through today's agenda. I'm just pulling up my notes. So I thought I would start off by giving you a bit of an update on what's happening within Community Living Oshawa Clarington around COVID-19 and any experience we've had around COVID. We have had one location on April the 8th that we had had COVID symptoms at our location. So we had an outbreak. It ended up that five people that we serve at that location all were tested positive for COVID, experienced the COVID illness. And we also had two staff from that location that were also diagnosed with COVID. All of those people are recovering or recovered, and we're very, very, very happy to say that. The outbreak was declared over on April the 29th by Public Health. It was our first experience, and I would have to say that we had a lot of support, a lot of amazing support from the families involved at that location, as well as the employees that did an amazing, extraordinary job supporting people through our first COVID outbreak. We have had a second a diagnosis of COVID at a different location where we've had one staff that was exposed to COVID outside of work. Public Health worked very quickly at declaring that an outbreak, and all PPEs are in place. That was on May the 3rd. No one at this location has any symptoms. All four people residing at the location have been tested and are negative. Three of the staff have been tested at that location and are negative, and we're waiting for three more staff to be tested. And we're very happy that the sector is now seen as a priority for testing. The staff who was tested positive is recovering at home. And again, I can't express how much the support of our employees and the support of the families have mean to us going through these experiences. We do have some specific screening protocols in place, and we're working very proactively and diligently to make sure that we're staying on top of any broader symptoms across the agency. So as a result, we've had 13 other people who have exhibited some sort of illness that we considered to be COVID-like. So we've had those people have all been tested and have been tested negative for COVID-19. And we do want families to know that when there are symptoms at a location, presumptive or confirmed cases of COVID, we will keep you informed, make sure you're contacted immediately, and that we keep you up to date on any of the processes. We do want to attribute our employees' diligence in keeping COVID-19 at bay as we fight to flatten the curve. We're all working very, very hard. We continue to follow the government's precautions, staying at home unless absolutely necessary, frequent washing of hands, practicing good respiratory hygiene, staff wearing their masks while they're on shift, frequent cleaning and disinfecting, especially those high touch areas. All of these efforts are really important and make a huge difference in helping to battle COVID. And we definitely need to keep the diligence up and not get complacent. CLOC has put many directives in place over the last 19 weeks in order to keep staff and people we serve safe and as healthy as possible. And our environment changes daily, so we do know that that we need to stay agile and stay on top of those changes and make sure we're implementing them as quickly as we possibly can. CLOC has a pandemic team. We meet on a regular basis to ensure that we're up to date on those changes from the government and the health officials and partners. We have instructions, tools, training, and communication available to our employees via our CLOC's training portal and our staff intranet. Our staff website is constantly updated, including our COVID-19 updates there. And we have our employees are offered a COVID-19 hotline to call us with any questions. And we've made sure that employee assistance programs are offered to all of our qualifying staff. And this Zoom meeting, we've done a Zoom with staff and Zoom now with families. So this is another way for us to try to make sure we're reaching out and communicating to everyone. Minister Todd Smith announced on April 23rd that a COVID-19 action plan for vulnerable people with a focus on containment and including enhancing screening, tightening up essential visitors protocols, and mandatory use of masks. Employees are screening their temperature twice a day and doing screening before they come to work and screening well and monitoring their symptoms or any symptoms as they go throughout the day. And have limited the work to only one employer. So CLOC's been very proactive in the measures and the steps that we've taken that even prior to the government taking those directives. People supported in group living have been sheltering in place now for 2 months. So we know our biggest risk is coming as for COVID-19 to come into the location through our staff. While CLOC has put employee screening in place, there still remains the fact that COVID-19 is spread by asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic people. So these are people that have no idea that they're sick, they don't have fevers, and they don't know that they're carrying COVID. So the use of a mask to limit the spread is really important. CLOC has a good supply of PPE, but we continue to source PPE constantly. And we do have some difficulty with finding some of the items such as disposable gowns. MCSS has established a PPE survey and suggests that PPE will be accessed through this type of process in the future. So they're trying to help us with our procurement of PPE. But at this point in time, CLOC spends a lot of time sourcing and obtaining PPE. Personal protective equipment. CLOC's assembled a rapid response team that comprises of a few staff from the Joint Health and Safety Committee and CLOC's quality assurance lead. This team provides employees with immediate support when it comes to if there's any symptoms of illness at any of the locations. They make sure that they provide support to staff for training, the use of PPE, setting up donning and doffing stations for the PPE, helping staff around their isolation plans and any precautions that they need to put in place. And they also work in liaison with public health, and all of our direction is coming from public health at this point around our response to COVID. We also have a pandemic team that meets several times a week and more if necessary. That team is responsible for communication. It's responsible for the securing of PPEs and making sure that we're implementing all of the necessary precautions. April 25th, the government recognized the dedication and sacrifice of frontline workers with a pandemic premium pay. The CLOC is awaiting some more information from the provincial government around outlining how these funds will be flowed and the different positions that they're covering. Once this information is clear, we'll make sure it gets passed along to our employees and to everyone else. CLOC was ahead of the curve and applied a $2.50 shift premium to our employees on March 22nd that went retro back to March the 8th. And that was in order to make sure we were stabilizing our staffing and recognizing their efforts. And now that this, the government, and that was also in anticipation that the government would come forward with funds for COVID-related issues, and we're very happy that the government has. So the $4 shift premium will be replacing the $2.50. Employees are working over 100 hours will also receive a lump sum payment through this pandemic pay of $250 a month. The pay is allocated over 16 weeks from April 24th to April 13th. August 13th. Sorry, I've just lost my way in some of my notes. As time moves on with the pandemic, we're hearing that there's forecasts for the pandemic to go as long as 18 months. We're starting to take a look at and think about what will services look in the future. We'll be taking our direction from the government around any safeguards that we need to take. But we'll be engaging back in planning with people, our team of staff and families around what kind of changes, services, and supports we'll need moving forward in response to COVID-19. We really want to thank everyone for all of your strong support during these uncertain times. And we are all in this together. We're proud of everyone pulling together as a team. We've seen some amazing creativity, compassion, commitment, and diligence and dedication during a very, very trying time in our society. So we're making sure that our most vulnerable people in our community are well cared for and safe. And we want to thank everyone for all of your efforts in that. Back to you, Mac.
Thanks very much, Terry. A question has come up that I'm going to address just very quickly regarding whether or not there'll be audio for Q&A purposes. The answer is no, there won't be any audio, but you can use the chat box in the Zoom app or on your computer to ask your question, okay? I'd like to open the floor now to Wayne Planowski. Wayne is the chair of CLOC's Governance Committee. He's a board member and he's also a parent whose son is living in a group home setting. And so I'd like to pass the floor over to Wayne Planowski.
Hi, welcome everyone. As Mac has said, I'm Wayne Klenowski. I'm a member of the CLOC Board of Directors, chair of the Governance Committee, and a parent of someone supported by CLOC. My son Mark is 36 and in residential care now for over 20 years. First of all, I would like to commend our executive director, Terry Gray, and her team for the hard work they're doing around this COVID-19 pandemic. We are in a situation that is new and different than anything we could have imagined. To be able to put precautions and safeguards in place on short notice, rally the troops, and adjust to every piece of information on a daily or even hourly basis is a very tall order. CLOC has done a great job to put the health and safety of the employees and the people receiving supports and services first. During the past 3 years, I've had the privilege of being on the board of directors to help make the many changes necessary to move forward with new processes and determine the best next steps in these uncertain times. The men and women of the board, as well as the staff, are knowledgeable, innovative, and compassionate. We've had meetings. I'm always impressed how well any issues are dealt with to the benefit of the people we serve. As a parent, I've gone through the frustration and sadness of not being able to visit my son that I'm sure many of you have been dealing with as well. Seeing him in person was something my wife and I did on a regular basis, and having to have it stop so abruptly was exceedingly difficult. The staff at his home have worked awfully hard looking after his physical and mental well-being. We have been in contact with the staff at his home to check on Mark and have followed all the protocols and processes CLOC has put in place to promote the health and safety of everyone at that home. We've also taken time to drop off goodies for staff and his housemates to enjoy. Sometimes it's important to do the little things to make us feel connected. I'd just like to wrap up by saying thank you to everyone who has worked so diligently through these past weeks to give us peace of mind that CLOC is doing all they can for all those that they have in their care. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Wayne. And now I'd like to open the floor to Marwa Yunus Damani, who is the medical director at Community Living Toronto and co-founder of Seamless Care Pharmacy, who's also CLOC's pharmacy. So now I'd like to offer the floor to Marwa, please.
Hello, everyone. Mac, can you hear me well?
Hear you perfectly, loud and clear.
Great, thank you. Sorry, I tried to work my video today, but I'm not that tech savvy, so it didn't work. Next time, hopefully, I'll be able to work it a little bit better. So thank you, everyone, today. Great to be on here, and it's nice to be able to speak to everyone. I want to thank Clock for bringing me on. I've been able to be exposed to a lot of different things that different agencies are doing. Being the medical director of Community Living Toronto for the past month and a bit has really also helped give me kind of an internal view on what agencies are doing for this pandemic. And I've worked very closely with Clock. We've been working very closely with Clock from Seamless Care, from Seamless Care Pharmacy for the past few years. And I'm always very honored to be on their team and to be able to see everything they're doing to protect the individuals that they support. So one of the themes I know that we're consistently talking about is how much information out there that is about COVID. I mean, on the daily, subject matter experts are reading new papers, reading new studies, and information is not only changing daily, in some cases it's changing hourly. It's a new virus that the world is really learning about, and I know it can be really frustrating that what we knew last month or what we were telling you last month is basically almost 180 degrees difference than what we were saying before. There was a time where we said masks for everybody is not necessary, and then we started saying, okay, wear cloth masks, and now we're saying surgical masks for everyone. It really has to do with just how much information we are learning, but also at the speed of light. So we have never seen studies happen so quickly, even medication studies or epidemiological studies. This has really been one of the fastest times that we've been able to gather information as well as have clear direction to everybody to be able to deal with this virus. So one of the things I always like to start with is to make sure that everyone out there is fact-checking. So we're hearing a lot of different things from the news, from different news stations, depending on what you're listening to, from, different social media. And you really want to, especially if you're hearing something that may be too good to be true or too bad to be true, you want to always double check with the information that you already know, and that what you're hearing from very, very reputable resources like Public Health Ontario, the Ministry of Health, as well as the World Health Organization and the Center for Disease Control. So those are the websites that we are going to regularly in order to get the most up-to-date and most reliable sources of information. So let's talk. I like to start with a few facts, and it's usually about their names that are floating around. I mean, some of this information you may already know, but I like to, mention how the coronavirus, there's different names out there. Coronavirus is really the family of viruses. It's like saying I have a cold virus or a chest virus. SARS-CoV-2, if you've heard that term, that's the name of the actual virus. The SARS-CoV-1 was the first SARS virus that we remember back from 2003. So there's been a lot of references to that virus, SARS and the 2003 times, looking back at how we managed that, as well as, how the virus might be different from the first SARS-CoV, the SARS-CoV-1 virus. And that really helps build our understanding of this virus now. The COVID-19 is the infection or the disease that is caused by the virus, once the virus enters your body and affects your system. So one of the things, so the virus is transmitted. You may have heard of the difference between contact, droplet, airborne precautions. This specific virus is only transmitted through droplets. So it's not through the air, it's not airborne, it's not going to be flying if somebody is a good distance away from you. It really is the droplets. So the droplets that come out of your mouth when you're coughing, sneezing, or just when you're casually speaking. And that's why we've tried to enforce the masks for everyone, because when everyone is wearing a mask, then we're really reducing that risk of those droplets that are coming out of your mouth being spread into, your close proximity. So when we say it's not airborne, that's really important because that also shows how what we're doing in the homes and the type of PPE that we're using in the home. So the fact that it's just droplets is why we say 2 meters or 6 feet away, why physical distancing is really important, especially when you go out in the community, when you're going to a grocery store, really important to maintain that 2 meters or 6 feet away. And then adding on that surgical mask as well helps you protect everyone. So even if you happen to not be able to maintain the 6 feet away, somebody's walking by you, accidentally you're sneezing, coughing, you're adding that extra layer of protection. That's why it's really important. When we are worried about it being an airborne virus, so when we're is basically, I'm not sure if you've heard, but there are some medical procedures called AGMPs is what we're referring to them. They're called aerosol generating medical procedures. So there are certain procedures that will take those droplets, you know, from your saliva, and they will basically produce a mist out of them. So those specific procedures, the only ones that we would have in agencies would be nebulizers, CPAP or BiPAP machines, so PAP machines, or very, very rare occasions, some agencies are doing trach suctioning for individuals that are supported. For the nebulizers at Seamless Care Pharmacy, we've actually eliminated the use of nebulizers in all the homes for all the agencies. We've contacted primary care providers, and with their help, so with their physicians, we've been able to change people to just a regular inhaler with an aero chamber. And when you have an aero chamber with an, when you have an inhaler with an aero chamber, you do not, it's not considered an AGMP, and therefore you do not need an N95 mask. So the reason we really like to stress AGMPs is because only in those situations will a staff member or a caregiver who is supporting somebody who's suspected, so either has symptoms or is COVID-19, will they need an N95 mask. So it's really, really important to know that very specific situation. That's the only time that somebody would need an N95 mask for. There are very, very clear guidelines. If you look at the IPAC guidelines, and IPAC stands for Infection Prevention and Control guidelines. So those are very specific. And they're the ones that show us the different types of infection control. So it really goes from, there's kind of a hierarchy, which is what you're doing in the environment, first of all. So eliminating visitors, making sure that everybody stays physical distancing. There's different things that you can do in the environment. And really the personal protective equipment like masks, goggles, face shields, those are kind of the last line of defense. So we still want to make sure that we are using those appropriately, but we want to make sure that we are doing all the other infection control policies and guidelines in the homes and within the agency in order to prevent the virus from coming in. Because if you're neglecting everything else, if you're not doing all the other procedures that are important, you know, limiting visitors, making sure to, you know, isolate people when they needed to be isolated, then the masks and personal protective equipment are really not going to provide you the 100% protection that you're looking for. So it's really important to stress that point. For the N95 masks, if there is an AGMP in the home and you do need an N95 mask, it would only be if you're directly supporting the individual while they are using this AGMP. So let's say you have an individual who needs a CPAP machine, but they're able to turn it on themselves, they're able to manage it themselves and turn it off themselves. And so staff's not needed inside at any moment, so therefore they would not need an N95 mask. They would just need to practice extra precautions when they are cleaning the equipment later. So some of the other things around the N95 mask is it really does need to be professionally fitted. I know that some agencies are providing professional fitting right now, and that clock does have that set up. And one of the other things that we really try to discourage the use of N95 masks is they are not comfortable at all. They're extremely, I don't know if you've seen pictures of healthcare providers from around the world, from Canada, with their faces all bruised up. But unless they are fitted extremely tightly, so there's absolutely no spaces between the mask and your face, they're really not providing much more control than possibly a surgical mask that's fitted really well. And then when you're wearing something that's extremely uncomfortable on your face, that increases the chances of you touching your face all the time. And really, that's one of the things that we want to prevent, because the other part of the droplet is the contact. So if somebody sneezed, or if there's droplets on, you know, a table or somewhere, and your hands go there, and then your hand go to your mouth, eyes, or nose, that's also a different way where the virus can come in. So one of the biggest things that we do not want people to do is to be touching their PPEs, be touching their masks, their goggles, anything on their face at any time without having just washed their hands for 20 seconds. Really important to stress that point. I've been outside seeing people with surgical masks and, you know, they're touching things and they go and put their hand on their mask and take it off so they can go on their phone or take it off to have a drink. And that really is not protecting you unless you are washing your hands very well, disinfecting them before touching your face. You're really putting yourself at a lot of risk. The great thing about the virus is that it is very susceptible to soap. So the hydrophilic properties of the soap, hydrophilic properties means the way that soap breaks down oil or anything that is kind of oily, the way it breaks down soap when we, oil when we wash our hands, that actually destroys the outer layer of the virus. And that's why we need to do it for 20 seconds, making sure that we get every single little crevice on our hand. There's some great videos out there that show exactly how you're supposed to be washing your hands properly for the best infection control strategies. So in the pharmacy, especially when we're making any of our sterile products, we have a very intensive hand washing procedure that goes all the way up to your elbows, especially if you're wearing a short sleeve shirt. So really important to remember those strategies. One thing that I like to remind people is that when you look very closely, you will see it will seem that the death rate is actually seen slightly high, but I want everyone to remember that we're only testing people that are, even in the beginning, we were only testing people that were coming into hospital and were already very severe. So lots of people who are getting very mild symptoms, and even those who are not getting any symptoms at all, what we're calling asymptomatic. So A means without symptoms. So when you hear the term asymptomatic, that means without symptoms. So a lot of people out there walking asymptomatic with no symptoms who do have the virus, and that's why we also stress the surgical masks at all times, they're not being tested in most cases, as well as public health is not allowing us to test them. So a lot of experts are saying that, you know, maybe next year when we look back, we're going to realize that the death rate is actually quite overstated and might just be a very, very bad case of the regular influenza death rate that we get on a regular in a regular winter. One of the other words I like to address is the word pandemic. It's a scary word. I know when it first came out, everybody's talking about a pandemic, has kind of like a fear thing to it. But when you look into it, a pandemic really is just a worldwide spread of a new disease. That's straight out of the World Health Organization definition. The Center for Disease Control also defines it as defines pandemic as an epidemic that has spread over several countries or continents, usually affecting a large number of people. So a pandemic is really only about geographical spread. It's not the severity of the disease. So I wanted to take away that fear aspect of it. One of the things I like to remind people is who's at risk. Really, really important. Biggest percentage of the people, mortality or people that are dying from COVID-19 are those who are older. So over 60, over 65, over 70 are the highest. So older population is the most at risk, and the younger population are actually more of the ones who are the carriers. So there's been a study out of South Korea who basically just tested everyone, regardless of symptoms or age group. And they found out that the oldest population is most affected by disease, and the young population were the ones who that's the 20 to 29 age group, were actually the ones who are quote unquote the asymptomatic carriers, so the ones that are carriers without symptoms. So that's why we see in certain populations where, you know, the older tend to hang out with that group a little bit more, that's where the highest spread. So in Italy, and different places like that. I want to remind, so not only is it older, but it's also people who have what we call chronic conditions, which would be things like any chronic lung disease, asthma, COPD. There's several other lung diseases and respiratory diseases that we can mention, or if you have any questions about any serious heart conditions, because COVID can affect some of the blood vessels, as well as anyone who's immunocompromised. So whether that be because you're on some sort of cancer treatment, HIV or AIDS treatment, or have a genetic immunodeficiency, that obviously puts you at risk because your immune system is down. people with severe obesity, so a BMI of 40 or higher, tend to be at risk because their organs already tend to be under stress. So it can lead to the specific risk factor of organ damage and stage organ damage. People who are diabetic and those with chronic kidney disease or have dialysis, or people with chronic liver disease. So some of the things that you can do to protect yourself if you have any of these chronic conditions is, first of all, obviously stay safe, keep isolated, make sure you're disinfecting anything, washing your hands, but also ensure that you are making sure that your chronic illnesses are very well managed. Make sure that if you are diabetic, if you have heart disease, that you're taking your medications appropriately, that you're eating and doing your diet the way that it's supposed to be, and really making sure that you're at as healthy as you can be during this time. Lastly, I want to end with testing. I know there's been a lot of talk about testing, who to test, when to test, what happens if you get a negative test, and a lot of families and a lot of people out there, they just want everyone tested. So there's quite strict public health guidelines on who we should be testing. And there is some, you know, there are scientific reasons behind that. So if we are testing, let's say we know that somebody just had exposure yesterday, it will take the virus up to 5 to 10 days with what we call an incubation period. So what does that mean? It means that the virus just entered your body through your nose, eyes, mouth. Now it needs to go and find a cell because it needs to go and hibernate in the cell and try start replicating or start making more viruses. And only when you reach a certain number of viruses in your body will the test actually detect that you have COVID-19. So hypothetically, if we test everyone and people are not symptomatic and we get a negative test, then we may be letting down our guards falsely. So a negative test does not always mean that you don't have COVID-19. If we're doing it too early, you have a very high chance of having a false negative test. That's why it's really important to just maintain the monitoring inside the home. So right now in all the agencies and all the homes, we are monitoring people for symptoms twice daily. We're checking fevers, checking temperature. And really what we are most worried about is if somebody who's symptomatic deteriorates and the symptoms become too hard to manage in the home. So most importantly, it really is about management and monitoring. Just knowing that somebody's COVID-19 right now, we are enforcing all the strictest levels of infection control in a lot of the homes. And really it's about that. It's making sure we're wearing the right PPEs, making sure we're restricting the visitors from coming in. And like Terry mentioned, making sure that staff that's coming in is still wearing their masks, still maintaining infection control and physical distancing when they can. And the minute they do get a little bit of symptoms, that's when we're doing the testing, because that's when the most likelihood of us getting a positive test and not getting a false negative and then saying, okay, you're good, you know, act normal. So really, this is what I like to stress to everyone about the testing. I know we'd love to see everyone tested, but it really doesn't make sense, and it really can, guide us in the wrong direction. So I hope you guys found this informative, and if you have any questions, please send them over, and I'm happy to answer them later. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Marwa. It's awesome to have that kind of resource available to us to not only provide us with information, but also be willing to answer questions that we may have. Before we go on to the questions, the list of questions that have already been submitted, and then some other questions that come in on the question chat, I'd like to offer some perspective on COVID-19 from my perspective. And I like to think that I bring maybe a unique or perhaps a different perspective to the table. Outside of my role as vice president at Clock, I'm also a family member of a supported individual who is part of a different community living agency and who has been in the community living family for over 50 years. In addition to the above, I also work in senior management in the DS sector. And recently, my entire role has been repurposed to manage my agency's response to COVID-19. This committee, the Emergency Preparedness Committee, is also overseeing all pandemic planning. And because of that, the topic of COVID-19 and how it affects our sector has become of particular interest to me. We all had pandemic plans before this and coming into this. We had infectious disease protocols, and we had policies that governed what we should do in these circumstances. However, none of them said that my barber was going to be closed for 7 weeks. And as you can see, I could really do with that visit sooner rather than later, as I'm sure that's applicable to all of you. Thing is, COVID-19 was completely different. An illness that we had never experienced before. It was something that we weren't entirely sure how to prepare for. World governments and health agencies and other organizations were being tasked with brand new challenges every single day. In fact, every single hour of every single day. There was no best practice, because at that point, the best practice didn't exist. This is a universal illness. It's not discriminatory at age or socioeconomic status or geographic location, ethnicity, or anything else. We're all in the same boat in terms of fighting the virus as a collective group, learning new things every single day. Every community dealing with COVID-19 has had their fair share of challenges. On the top, I'm sure, is the anxiety, stress, and pressure that this pandemic has had on staff, on families, on governments, followed closely by public health and government standards that are changing on a daily, and as I said before, hourly basis. Adjusting to all of these changes in our professional life and in our personal life, in of itself, causes immense amounts of stress and anxiety. And it's completely understandable. There are a number of issues that we are seeing on a universal basis. Access to PPE, procuring hand sanitizer, for example, or disinfectant and other cleaning supplies. Understanding and accessing all these new business and employment and financial supports. Understanding new government initiatives and guidance received from local, provincial, and federal health authorities. And combing through the literal mountains of information and advice generated from many different platforms around the globe in order to make the best decisions possible for those we support and the staff that are supporting those that we support. Congregate settings in general, group homes, are especially high-risk locations. Any place where multiple people are congregating or living, including the residential setting. And this is where the DS sector comes into play. And aside from the challenges that I already listed off, we've seen a number of challenges that are specific to our sector. How do we explain an entire life change to our family members, to our loved ones? And how do we provide support in an extended time of crisis, especially with not being able to be there with them face to face? Is there really a social story that captures how life-altering this physical distancing and shelter-in-place protocols thing that's happening right now is? And can physical distancing truly be adhered to in our settings? And are we doing enough to protect not only ourselves personally and professionally, but also our loved ones and those that we are supporting? And how do we support individuals who may be somewhat defiant of agency protocols, which, just so everyone's aware, is going to be part of this entire pandemic? I think of everything that we are dealing with through COVID-19, the most important thing is to recognize the innumerable contributions that are made by our frontline teams and by those that are directly involved in managing and mitigating the risks of this illness. And I want to send a great big thank you to all of them. But I also want to thank the families who have shown unwavering support for CLOC during these difficult times. Listen, I know how hard it is not to be able to see your family members, at least face-to-face. There are other virtual means. I know how hard it is, and I know the feeling all too well. As I said, my uncle, who is a supported individual, who is a medically fragile supported individual, is sheltering in place, and we have not been able to visit with him or to provide him those supports on a face-to-face basis. And so I understand it very well. And I just thank you for your unwavering support for Community Living Oshawa Clarendon. At this time, I'd like to go through some of the questions. So what we did was we actually asked for questions ahead of the Zoom meeting so that we were coming into this meeting prepared. And if we need to, we'll go over by a couple of minutes. I think we're supposed to end this at 2:30, but we'll go over a couple of minutes if need be to make sure that as many questions as possible can be answered. So the first question that came in, and I love this question, it, from a family member, is how can we help? And so I think I'm going to pass this question on to Marnie for her to answer. So Marnie, if you're there, please pop on and answer the question, how can we as family members help?
Hi there, everybody. So we have had a lot of families asking us how they can help out in their family members' locations or clock in general. And so there are lots of different ways that families can help. If your family member lives at a particular group location, you can stop by and drop off a dinner on their front doorstep. You could stop by and drop off crafting materials or cards. We're not asking people to stay completely away. You can do window visits with people if you'd like. It's just the one-to-one contact that we're concerned about at this time. Another thing that you can do in order to help out is to provide us with some donations of items that people could use during this time, such as word search books, coloring books, some things like that that people can use to keep themselves busy. We do support many individuals that live on their own and as such, and they've been sheltering in place and they have not been able to get out and get those kinds of supplies for themselves. So if you're able to donate them, we can deliver them on your behalf to these people. And the third way that you can contribute, obviously, is financially. We are still running our My Life, My Community, My Way campaign, which is raising money for experiences for people. And right now we're trying to provide those experiences within their homes. So if you are able to provide financially through a donation, we can then use that donation to give people the things that they need within their own homes, whether it's in one of our group homes or whether they live independently. So if anybody has any questions, you can certainly give me a call or email me and I'm happy to answer them. And enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks so much, Marnie. Okay, the next question that was submitted prior to the Zoom meeting today is, when will day services be reopening? And I'd like to pass that question on to Bev Nguyen, please, to answer. So Bev, if you could join us and answer the question, when will day services be reopening?
Hi, everyone. So the provincial emergency order will provide direction for us to follow in when we are going to be able to open any of our services and how we are going to do business or offer services. So all those timelines are coming from the province and when we can open up. CLOC needs to be in a position to make changes to services, keeping in mind the longer term impact of COVID and the new way we may need to do business. So the focus will be looking on ways to individualize supports, so to enhance individualized opportunities and providing support to people to have meaningful opportunities and activities in their lives. Back to you, Mac.
Thanks so much, Bev. The next question that has come in is, when will we be able to visit, and this is a common question that we're seeing a lot of, when will we be able to visit at the homes or bring our family members home for a visit? And I will pass that either on to Bev or to Christine, whoever would like to answer that question.
I'll take that one. So we continue to follow the parameters the government has recommended in order to remain safe and healthy. We understand how difficult this is. Currently, we are not allowing visitors in the home in order to minimize potential risk. Staff and family have been very creative with social distancing, with visits that include drive-by Easter visits, birthdays, curbside sidewalk visits, and using technology to visit with their family members. We are all experiencing the same limitations. As for taking family members home, each request is considered separately, depending on the experience for the person. Back to you, Mac.
Thanks so much, Christine. Next question I'm going to direct to Janice, and that question is, who do I contact if I have questions or concerns? So over to Janice, please.
Thanks, Mac. The supervisor of the location is always your best and usually first option for any type of question or concern. If the supervisor can't answer your question immediately or to your satisfaction, they can certainly pass it on to a member of our operations team, and we can either relay that message back or we can have a conversation with you around what your questions or concerns are so that you have a clearer understanding of whatever it is that you're inquiring about. The management team are all there to support the supervisors and your family member. So we certainly encourage any questions to be relayed to the supervisor first.
Thanks so much, Janice. Okay, the next question is, the government is funding PPE. Why is CLOC having such a hard time getting it? And I think we're going to go to our health and safety guru, Randy, to answer that question, if there is an answer to that question.
Good afternoon. In the initial stages, there was quite a panic as far as trying to procure the product that we're talking about, the surgical masks, N95s in some cases, and gowns, face shields, eyeglasses. I must say at this point we are breathing much easier. We have a several month stock of surgical masks. We have staff wearing those at all locations, whether there are symptoms or not. N95s have been tested and are being used where we have the aerosolized medical procedures. It's only at a couple of locations. Gowns have been difficult, but we've had some donations from other agencies, and we do have a good stock of those at this point, given the current status of outbreaks or symptoms. We've had donations from other government agencies, including Children's Aid Society, and from other locations such as Oshawa Hydro, Canadian Tire, Conquer COVID, just to name a few. So I'm very confident at this point that we're in a good place.
Thanks so much, Randy. And as you can see, Randy is working from home today, and his scenery out of his back window is much better than what we are seeing here in Oshawa and Durham region today. So beautiful scenery, Randy. Next question, is the extra money that has become available for employees during COVID-19 going to be available after COVID-19? I'm going to pass this question on to Terry Gray to provide an answer, please. So Terry, if you could join in and provide an answer to the question, is there extra money that has become available for employees during COVID-19 going to be available after COVID-19?
I'll tell you right now that the funding that's come through the provincial government directed to the pandemic premium and the stipend is very specific and time limited. The timing goes up to August the 13th. It is not part of our regular ministry budget that we receive annually. We will continue to advocate for appropriate pay for our employees. We see the value that they add, the risks that they take on, working shoulder to shoulder to fight the pandemic and making sure they're providing high quality supports and services. So we're very happy that the government has stepped forward to provide the pandemic pay, and we'll continue to advocate for the sector as we move forward. But unfortunately, the pandemic premium is specific to the time frame outlined up to August the 13th. Thanks, Mac.
Thanks so much, Terry. The next question we have is, can we purchase extra technologies, laptops and tablets to be used by the people we support during COVID-19? I'm going to ask Janice Doolin to chime in here to answer that question, please.
Thanks, Mac. Passport funding has
responded to some of the needs for COVID-19 and have extended some temporary changes and eligibility to passport funding in a variety of different areas. There are some technological pieces that are exceptions as well, like laptops and tablets and video games, media, e-readers. There's also monitoring devices that can be done. They're also looking at some sensory items, activities and things to be looked at while you're isolating at home, arts and crafts supplies, puzzles and games. And then they're also open to funds for some personal protective equipment if needed, sanitizing and cleaning supplies, and those kind of pieces. They're also expanding funding for essential delivery services for pharmacy and groceries, and some behavioral supports. They have also made an announcement that 25% of your passport funding will be given in advance this year. I do not have any detail yet in terms of whether or not everyone is just going to get a check for that or how that's going to come out. The announcement was made on the 23rd of April, but we don't have any details yet on how you actually receive those funds. My suggestion would be if you want to take advantage of any of the COVID-19 passport pieces, to contact the supervisor of the location and have a conversation around what you would like to be able to purchase or do with that funding. And then we can double check and make sure that that's something that would be acceptable and how you would go about purchasing those and getting reimbursed for it. Thanks, Mac.
Great. Thanks so much, Janice. That's all the questions in terms of what's been pre-submitted. There have been a couple questions pop up on the chat bar. I'm going to generalize the questions because the questions are specific to individuals we want to maintain privacy when we're answering these questions. So I'm going to generalize the questions and then I'll point to specific people to answer those questions. So the first question is regarding the use of masks. When the use of masks became the normal protocol and whether or not that protocol should have been earlier. So I'll pass that answer on to Janice Doolin, please.
Thanks, Mac. I think some of the question might have already been answered in Marwa's presentation, that there's a difference between the surgical masks and the N95 masks and the washable, reusable masks that we first put out. Things have changed almost on a daily basis or weekly basis from public health. And we were actually ahead of the curve in having mandatory masks at all locations. So all of the staff by the 8th of April within the locations were wearing for their full shift the washable, reusable masks that had been given to them. And that just happened to coincide with an outbreak at one of the locations. But since the 8th of April, which is at least 2 weeks ahead of when it was recommended by public health, that we had all staff wearing masks at all locations. We did recently, within a couple weeks, 1 week after, that we did start implementing the surgical disposable masks, and those have been distributed for use for all staff, and it is mandatory for staff to wear the disposable surgical masks throughout their shift. N95 masks are a little bit of a controversial and different, but I think Marwa explained the need for an N95 mask is very limited and not needed in the homes unless you have a very specialized aerosolized need for that. But we have had the masks in place for quite a period of time, and the rest of the PPE, if there is any presumptive cases, we have the shields, the masks, and the gowns supplied. So I hope that answers the question. Anything more specific, we can certainly take offline and speak more individualized.
Great. Thanks so much, Janice. There was another question regarding when people can visit their family members again, but I think we've already covered that up to this point. And I in turn, there was another question posed, but we've already answered that one as well. So at this point, there does not seem to be any other questions posed in the chat box. So on that note, I'd like to thank everyone. First of all the family members who have attended our virtual meeting today. I know this is an unusual way for us to meet. Usually we're meeting in person and we're enjoying snacks and enjoying each other's company. And so things have changed a little bit. We're now joining in a virtual setting, and it's an interesting setting. But thank you so much for those family members who have joined in to the meeting today. I also want to thank all of the panelists who took part today, the senior staff at Clock, Marwa, who graciously gave us her time to be here and provide information and answer questions. I also want to thank JC and Wayne Klonowski, who brings the family perspective to the table as well. I want to remind everybody that this meeting was recorded, and so it will be distributed to families who were unable to attend or be part of this virtual setting. And then in addition, as I noted earlier, if there were any questions that you had that did not get answered, or if you rewatch this, the recording of this meeting and think, I have a couple of other questions, please feel free to pose those questions through the right streams, and we will do our best to answer those questions in any future communications to families. And finally, I just want to remind everyone to stay healthy and stay safe. And as I said, I know the feeling of being distant from our loved ones. And soon, this too shall pass. We're doing this for the health and safety of our loved ones. And so I want to, again, remind you, stay healthy, stay safe. And in terms of COVID-19, we're all in this together. We're all feeling the exact same way. And thank you, just another thank you for your unwavering support for how Clock is managing COVID-19. So thank you again, and have a wonderful afternoon.